Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Monday morning to you. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Jimmy and I were both on the road. Jimmy Kesson is with me this morning. Hi, Jimmy. How are you doing? All right?
Good morning, Andy. Alive and well and somewhat rested up.
I got a little more rested, Jimmy. We were both in Salt Lake. I was there doing grandpa duties. And we had a birthday for the twins, granddaughters.
I'd have trade you for anything. Grandpa duty would have been a lot more fun than what I was doing this weekend.
I also went to a missionary farewell for one of my nephews. It was a good family weekend. I had to load a trailer full of crap, and on the way back for my son, pulling this trailer behind my truck and full of stuff, and my son says something that I don't think I'm going to forget anytime soon. He's like, yeah, I appreciate you getting this trailer. He says, honestly, we could have just taken it right to the dump. I'm like, wait, what? We just spent an hour and a half loading this thing, and I'm pulling it 350 miles, and you were going to throw it away? Oh, no, there's probably a couple things we're saving, but anyway. It's parking
for his home. I understand. Yeah. I recall the move to Utah and loading the moving van plus, you know, the stuff that didn't fit in the moving van. And how many of those containers or boxes have still not been opened?
Almost
20 years that we've been here.
I remember, it was way off topic, but I remember one time I used to deliver pizza. This was, we're talking 30 years ago, maybe more. I delivered pizzas to this house. Knock on the door, I think I was working for Godfather's Pizza at the time. Anyway, I go in.
I remember those. They were good.
Yeah. Oh, I love Godfather's. I miss Godfather's. Anyway, go in the door, and they have, you know how people have kind of like a parlor greeting room at the front of their house?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, the room was empty except two cardboard boxes about, you know, maybe, I don't know, just moving type boxes.
Yeah.
And so while I'm waiting for them to get the money to pay me, I go, oh, did you guys just move in? Because if you see an empty room with just a couple of boxes there, you've got to assume they just moved in. The lady goes, oh, just moved in. We've been here for 3 years. I'm like, oh, it was a diatribe. She just berated me for about 10 minutes. And then I got back to the pizza place, and the manager calls me in. Hey, did you make a comment about people's room? And I said, yeah, it was an empty room with some boxes in it. I figured they just moved in. He goes, well, the lady was offended and said she'll never buy pizza from us again.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, alrighty then. I guess I will never comment on people's parlors ever again. Anyway, Jimmy Kesson was at the Republican convention, the Utah State Republican convention, and it was long. Jimmy, you guys started at what time in the morning?
Oh my! Well, they began credentialing at 7 a.m. I did not get there at 7 a.m. I got there a little after 8.
Okay.
Because our first multi-county, we had one multi-county vote.
Okay.
Those have to happen there. It was for school board, for state school board. And that was we weren't scheduled to that till like 9:45. So I knew I had plenty of time, I thought.
Okay.
Well, credentialing was a disaster.
Uh-oh.
And then the breakout sections for the multi-county voting was way behind schedule, more than an hour delayed. So the convention itself didn't get started on time. And then it broke records for how long it went.
On and on and on.
And it was not, yet it was not, this is, you know, I need a point. This convention, while it had some of the usual, that small group of people whose goal it is to wear everybody out so that so that delegates leave before a particular vote that they're interested in so they can improve the odds of their winning.
Right.
And it's just a standard tactic that a small group of people do at every convention, and measures have been taken to shorten that up. There was no four-hour rules battle like the convention that made me famous when I made a motion to throw off everything off the agenda that didn't involve nominating candidates and got
Did it make you famous or infamous?
It got me elected county chairman on the state central committee, on the executive committee, and I rode that all the way to being a member of the electoral college for Utah. There's only six of those spots in any presidential election, and so I became pretty well known by the delegates as the guy who cut 4 or 5 hours off the end of the convention.
So some folks were happy with
yeah. So I got a sympathy vote.
So, and you said something earlier, and those that weren't listening earlier this morning, with the Salt Palace, which is where the convention was, you guys had leased it for the day, rented it for the day, and I guess there's a provision. Tell us about this midnight provision thing.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I was talking with the state party chair, and Rob Axton told me that they didn't realize it, but as this thing kept getting later and later, and as we were approaching 10:30, almost 11 o'clock, and there was we had not even started. It was almost 11 o'clock, and we were not even done with the Senate race, which right. was the last race before any other business had to be taken care of. They checked the contract. There was a provision in the Salt Palace contract that said if we weren't done at 11:59 and at least emptying the place out, but if we were still conducting business at 11:59, it was a $10,000 fine.
Oh, man. That's a lot of money, man.
That's a lot of money when you're talking about the rental on a facility.
Yeah. So you guys had to hurry.
Wrapped it up quick, and it's amazing how fast they were able to amend the agenda to dump the rest of the stuff off, the rest of the business off the back, which was party business. They were amendments to the party constitution and, resolutions on important policy positions. Those things had their place, but we just ran out of time because there were a lot of candidates, especially in the three congressional races that had a challenger. Yeah. Owens, of course, Burgess Owens did not. He's our nominee. But the other three had some serious challenges, especially for the open seat, and that was a long battle for the nomination in Curtis's district.
Okay, we're just getting rolling here, but Doug wanted to ask you a question.
Absolutely.
Doug, what's going on, man?
Yes, hi. Jimmy, how you doing?
I am blessed and ready to roll.
Excellent. Thank you. Just a quick question. I apologize. I can't remember the specific names of these candidates, but were they for the Republican taking Mitt Romney's seat in the Senate, the ones that one particular one I heard got the most votes. I just wondered how you felt about that name, if that's a real conservative or another Romney run-alike.
Well, that was a major goal of the convention, to make sure that some of the genuine conservatives who did not collect signatures made it to the ballot. There's going to be a wild and woolly primary battle for that Senate seat, because there were a few candidates that collected signatures. But the gentleman who rose, cream rises to the top, and the one who rose to the top in the minds of the delegates as the best representative for conservative Republican values was Trent Staggs. And he got the endorsement of the Republican Party delegates as the best choice going into the primaries, and really it was one of those where he built some incredible momentum. He was a mayor, and he built some incredible, and that culminated with the morning of the convention he received Donald Trump's endorsement.
That's a big one, and that definitely
put him over the top.
Well, that sounds like good news, Jimmy. Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I wanted to start right off the top, though, talking about the governor race. Jimmy, I got to ask you right up front.
And
you've never been one to mince words. How do you feel about our current governor? Just not talking about Saturday, just about the job that he's done.
Well, there's really two sides to Governor Cox, in my opinion.
There's two guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's the things he says and the things he does. Now, with most politicians, the things they say are everything you want to hear, and the things they do are everything you hate to find out they did. Yeah. That's what we get from most politicians. But if you look at the actual record of what has been done in this term, he has done some positive things. Now, he also, you know, he is very open and conciliatory in his language to the left. He believes he's been, you know, this disagree better.
Let's disagree better.
Yeah. Disagree better. And there's a lot of people who feel that disagree better is just code for rolling over for the left.
Yeah.
Because that's normally what the left means. When the left says disagree better or anything like it, they mean conservatives shut up and do it our way. Now, I don't believe that that's what Governor Cox means. I know him. I've spoken with him enough times personally and got to know him. I do not believe at all that Governor Cox, when he says that, means the same thing that the left does. Right, he is talking about, you know, it's really kind of an updated version of the Reagan doctrine, and you know, and that's, you know, I shall not speak ill of any fellow Republican, the 11th commandment, right? And the Reagan doctrine: if you agree with me 80% of the time, you're a friend.
Yeah,
and we'll try to persuade each other on the other 20%. That's the way Reagan did things. We have, however. I absolutely understand and in some respects agree with the idea that the left, we're not dealing with the same left that Ronald Reagan dealt with. The left today is far more evil, far more intent on destroying the republic that so many have fought and died for. And so, yes, we do need to be bolder in our opposition to what the left does. But I do agree that we can do that without, we can disagree without being disagreeable, without being, without assigning personal animus towards people.
Right.
Just because we disagree with them. That's what they do. And we don't have, we can fight back without fighting back the way they do it.
Right.
That's my opinion. And we don't ever have to compromise on policy or principle in order to do that. We can disagree with somebody and be civil.
So with the governor's race, and we want to go back a little bit here in a second, but with the governor's race, Phil Lyman.
And I'm not endorsing Governor Cox or Phil Lyman at this point. I've not made an endorsement. I know Phil, he'd make a great governor. But I haven't even thought about the primaries other than a couple that are absolute for me after doing my research ahead of the convention. But, you know, I think Phil is a solid, solid conservative.
Yeah.
You know, and he, the one thing you'll get from Phil is Phil will call out the left boldly and directly. We're not going to get that verbally from Spencer Cox, but he has signed a lot of legislation, and he pointed that out at convention. He has signed a lot of legislation that Republicans absolutely wanted, and while we can do even better than what he's done, and those were great first steps towards the goal of making sure that this is a red state and run like one, his Governor Cox's actions in office as far as the laws that were passed and the policies that were put forth are much better than
what he said.
What he says.
Yeah, good point. Let's do Republican Convention 101 real quick.
Absolutely.
Some people got nominated. They're the delegate. They've been voted. This other guy got signatures, so he's in the primary too.
Yeah.
How does that all work? Explain it to anybody who may be a little bit confused.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have a hybrid system right now in Utah. Mm-hmm. We were a caucus convention state, and that is what we should get back to. I am an absolutist on the caucus convention system. We gathered with our neighbors in February. Many of you went to your neighborhood caucus meetings, and every Republican was welcome in their neighborhood caucus meeting.
Right.
We met with our neighbors up in Santa Clara. And we discussed the policies and elected precinct chair and vice chair, two state delegates, several delegates, half a dozen in my precinct, to the county convention. Each precinct gets delegates assigned to it based on the Republican population in that precinct. So the more Republicans living in your precinct, the more delegate slots you get in the state and county convention. The convention comes together. Those people that were elected by our neighbors, and I was one of them. I was elected precinct chairman up in Santa Clara and for my precinct and a state and county delegate. We then go to each of the conventions, which are commonly held in April, to nominate, to vet and nominate the candidates. My job, starting in February, was to go through all of the candidates who wanted to run for office at either the county level or the state level, who will be on the ballot this November. At caucus, we also did the presidential preference vote instead of a primary vote so that our we're earlier in the process. Because we move our primary to June. It's a late primary. By that time, the nominee for president's usually settled. But at caucus night in February, we're one of the first states to declare who we want for president.
Preference, got it.
All right, so these delegates, our job is to get face-to-face with the candidates, review all their materials, check them out for integrity and where they are policy wise, and actually vet them instead of making decisions on 30-second sound bites.
Yeah.
Get eye to eye, face to face, look the person in the eye, and have that man or woman tell me what their core values are, and do I believe them when they're looking me in the eye? Because the eye is the window of the soul. And then you know these candidates. Not their campaign rhetoric, but you get to know them. And then you select the candidate that would best represent the Republican values as our nominee. And then the delegates vote at the convention, and that person is the nominee. The hybrid portion of this is there was a law passed several years back called SB 54 that allows people to bypass the vetting that goes on in the convention process and go directly to the primary ballot so that they can try to win the primary on 30-second sound bites and buy a nomination through raising more money, doing more advertising, and presenting themselves as they want to be seen rather than how they are. And that's our hybrid system now. So
it doesn't seem like, I don't know why there is this law. Will you explain to me why this law even exists that you can get signatures?
Yeah.
Because it seems like if we go through all this effort, elect our neighborhood delegates and our county delegates and our state delegates right. And get that all taken care of, why do we have signatures?
Yeah, I can actually make this fairly concise, even though the history on it's a little complicated.
Yeah.
When the late Senator Bob Bennett ran for re-election the last time that he ran for re-election. Mm-hmm. And this is when Mike Lee became our senator.
So what, 12 years ago?
Probably a dozen years. Yeah, no, this is going to be Mike's second or third term. So at least 12 to 18 years ago, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Between 12 and 18 years ago. I don't recall which. Senator Bennett was very unpopular with the Republican base and Republican Party. He had signed off on many Obama spending packages that were just awful, and he had voted for them anyhow. Yeah. And this was the Tea Party and the we've had it with all this government spending and high taxation. Well, Bob Bennett came in third at the convention, which means he did not go to the primary. He didn't even get to the primary.
Wow.
And Mike Lee won the primary and went on to be our senator. They were two conservative candidates that came out of, well, Senator Bennett and the people who backed him, which was the establishment moderate wing of the party.
A lot of money.
They didn't like that. And so they said, what we really need to do, Bob Bennett would have been an absolute shoe-in in a primary because he could have outspent his opponents 10-1. Mm. What we really need to do is be a direct primary state where there is no caucus, there is no convention, and we just go direct to primary, and money is what will determine our... And we don't have to actually tell these, rube voters... what we're going to do. Nobody's going to hold us accountable.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of the caucus convention system. Let's get rid of accountability to the voters. Let's get rid of actually having to defend our votes. And I will tell you something. What made me a fan of Orrin Hatch wasn't necessarily how he voted when a Democrat was in the White House, which was not always good. He was a great senator when a Republican was in the White House, including helping President Trump. And that man always would look you in the eye and defend the vote and tell you exactly why he voted the way he did. Hmm. Where Senator Bennett would say, you're just not smart enough to understand the intricacies of these things.
Condescending. Yeah.
Those were the two. And so you had two senators that didn't, you know, a very different approach to the delegates. And that's why Senator Hatch always did well at convention. And Senator Bennett's career was over because of it. Because he, you know, that last year, he called me. I was a delegate that year. Senator Bennett called me and actually told me that, you know, with 40 years in financial services and banking and loan, and as a loan officer and other positions like that, told me that I didn't understand the intricacies of finance. That caused him to, when I asked him about a specific bill. So
his cronies are the one that...
So, yeah, they threatened to put it on the ballot that year to eliminate the caucus convention system and spend every penny they had to beat the caucus convention system, which caucus promoters hadn't even started trying to fundraise to defend it. So there were members of the legislature who believed, and this was contested, that a hybrid allowing them to bypass the convention if they wanted through signatures would be the thing that saved the caucus convention system. Well, it still exists, but it has been, you know, someone who wouldn't even make it to the ballot at convention can now be on the ballot by collecting signatures.
Which is kind of what we're seeing, unfortunately. All right, we're going to continue our discussion and talk about some of the individual things that happened on Saturday in that marathon Republican convention when we come back. Jimmy Kesson with us.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Good morning, everybody. 9:35 on KDXU. Jimmy Kesson is here. Jimmy is a part of the Exchange Club, has been for a long time, and a lot of people are like, well, what is the Exchange Club? Jimmy, explain that to us and tell us what's coming up.
Yeah, the Exchange Club is America's service club. Most people heard of Rotary Club and Kiwanis and those kind of groups, and there are many great ones, and we've got some great Rotary club chapters here in Southern Utah that do terrific work. Kiwanis and others that do terrific work in the community. Not trying to leave anyone out if your club didn't get mentioned. But Exchange was founded and is exclusively an American service club that focuses on patriotism, Americanism, youth and children, and those kind of activities. And here in St. George, the Exchange Club turns 50 years old this year.
Happy birthday.
1974 was when the club started. And, you know, at Vernon Worthen Park, at the big fireplace, the concrete ground, if you look, one of those concrete bricks has the Exchange Club and the date for the money they raised to build that back in the 70s. So they've turned 50 years old. They're having a fundraising dinner at the Abbey Inn on May 11th to promote the programs that they do here in St. George and to celebrate 50 years of service. Many of the gazebos that you see in our parks have been paid for by the Exchange Club. Lots of money raised and given to the Parks and Rec Department for expansion of that. Tremendous things being done. We put on the Southern Utah Performing Arts Festival. Who in Southern Utah hasn't had a kid who went to SUPAF?
Yeah.
All right. My daughter was in SUPAF every year through school. Yeah. She sang in choir and music. So the Exchange Club puts that on. If you want more information, if you want to go to the dinner at the Abbey Inn, see the Exchange Club website. You can email them at exchangeclub.sg@gmail.com. That's exchangeclub.sg@gmail.com and get involved in Exchange, or just come to an outstanding dinner at the Abbey Inn and find out what's going on. There'll be a silent auction, a fundraiser. Be a lot of fun on the 11th of May.
It's a Saturday night. A couple of Saturdays.
Semi-formal, great night to go out.
Very cool. Jimmy's going to wear a tux.
I'm going to be on the Lido deck. We won't be here.
That's right. You're going on a cruise, aren't
you? Yeah. My wife and I are taking a little break.
Very cool. All right. We're talking about the convention on Saturday. Now, okay, so let's bottom line things. Governor's race, primary, Cox will be on the primary ticket along
it's gonna
with,
be Cox
along
and
with
Lyman.
Phil Lyman.
Yeah, it'll be Cox and Phil Lyman. I think it's just a heads up. Two-person race that there were no other signature gathers. This will be an interesting race. Hard to handicap. You would expect the numbers at convention do not reflect primary numbers, but not because the delegates don't represent the voting public. The delegates have different, many times, issues that they're focusing on. And in Governor Cox's case, he gets punished for going signatures by the delegates. He is the top Republican elected official in the state.
And yet.
And he goes signatures instead of going through convention. Now, there's a rule.
Does that mean he knew he was going to lose?
Well, look, I think that he knew that he wasn't going to get 60%, but there must have been enough people in his campaign staff that believe that he wouldn't get 40%. And you need 40% to make it to the ballot.
Right?
So 60% makes you the nominee, so you get it down to two people, and you got to break 40, and they didn't think even... Now, would he have broken the 40% barrier without going signatures? Based on what he got, which was 30-some-odd percent, I think, he probably would have beat the 40%, and the protest vote against... disagree better or whatever the protest vote was on would have not been enough to knock him out, but it was probably close enough that his team said that we're not going to take any chances.
Better safe than sorry.
In the primary, that punishment really kind of stops. Most Republican voters don't care how you got their primary ballot once we get to the primary. Now we want to know who to vote for. So primary candidates that went signatures always get punished. Derrick Brown was a good example of that. Derrick Brown was a very successful and well-liked chairman of the Republican Party a couple terms back, right? But he went signatures for the attorney general race, and he got definitely smacked down for that by the delegates. And he'll be in the primary. It'll be an interesting primary for attorney general. But he was a prime example of somebody who clearly was a much better candidate and much better liked by the delegates than the numbers he got. And that was, you know, hey, you were our representative fighting for the caucus convention system, and then you went signatures. So that was definitely a protest vote.
Okay, let's talk about Congressional District 2. Celeste Malloy, Colby Jenkins. Jenkins won the delegation, right? He's on. He didn't need signatures.
He did not need signatures. He did not hit 60%. Neither one of them went signatures. Celeste Malloy trusted the delegates. She knew that there were a couple of votes when she first got there. Remember, she's only been in Congress maybe 5 months total, tops. Brand new at the end of someone else's term.
Right.
Hard to go in there and buck the speaker on your first vote. Unless you want to be stuffed in a basement on a subcommittee somewhere and never heard from again when it comes to committee assignments. Some of those votes are going to pass anyhow, but the speaker wants your vote. And that's part of the negotiating of being in Congress that we all hate. But is there. She didn't go signatures. She trusted the delegates. She said, I will defend my record. And she did. Everybody knows Celeste is a friend, and I have fully endorsed her before I knew the field. She deserves a full term. I still endorse her. She was my vice chair when I was chairman of the party here. And I know her. I trust her. And that's why I endorsed her. Right? And she broke 40%. She did come in second. Colby did very well at convention. The protest vote on some of her votes was well heard by her. I know that to be a fact. And she, you know, they're going to a primary together. I think that she deserves huge credit for going in there and trusting the delegates, only 5 months in office, never having run for office before other than as a party official.
Yeah.
She was Chris Stewart's leading advisor on legal issues,
right,
which is why he endorsed her for his seat. Right. And I want to give her great credit for trusting the delegates. It was a hard fought battle. It'll be a hard fought primary, but I think she'll do quite well.
So Tyler Jensen was also in that race.
He dropped out
and endorsed Jenkins as he dropped out. Did that help him, Jenkins, do you think?
Everything I saw and the kind of the straw polling at county conventions and in general, he wasn't pulling enough votes to make a difference.
No.
You know, it maybe it made a 3 or 4 point difference, so it looked like. But, you know, there were only less than about 100 votes separated Celeste. And, I mean, percentages look much bigger than the actual vote difference.
Right.
There are 950-some-odd voters in that precinct, in that congressional district, right? And he beat her by 100 votes. So it was a 50-vote margin from a tie. It was a lot closer than it looks percentage-wise,
right,
in the actual vote count. But, yeah, he clearly got a win. Congratulations. He worked hard, and he got and he had strong support from the anti-incumbent wing of the Republican Party. We have a percentage of our voters that will back you until we elect you. And the minute we elect you, you're an incumbent. We must get rid of you.
That doesn't make sense.
But there's a percentage of our voters that, based on their voting record over conventions in the almost 20 years I've been doing it, it's the anti-incumbent vote.
Now, Colby was pretty excited that he got the endorsement from Mike Lee. Did that affect the vote, do you think?
You know, it really, I don't know that it did by much. And the only reason I say that is Mike Lee's my favorite senator. I like him personally. We get along great. I love his voting record almost all the time. Right. But his endorsement pattern has clearly been all over the map and not always strictly on policy. And so some of the people he's endorsed were clearly candidates that don't match his philosophy and his policy positions. Therefore, the delegates have kind of got the, okay, Mike Lee endorsed it. Nice. I mean, it really doesn't carry the weight you'd expect it to.
Right.
Because he has, in the past, endorsed some people as a favor because they endorsed him or because of some other reason, whatever his reasoning is. I can't read his mind, obviously. Yeah. And some of those endorsements didn't match his policy, which means his endorsements just haven't carried the weight you'd think they would.
Okay. I got another commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about replacing Mitt. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
All right, I guess somewhere people like Mitt Romney. I don't know, maybe Massachusetts. Somewhere people really love Mitt Romney. I didn't love Mitt Romney. I hated the way he turned his job as a senator into this personal vendetta against former President Trump, and among other things. And if the word rhino ever applied to a person in history, it would be that man, Mitt Romney.
I think he doesn't deserve that much credit. And my issue with Senator Romney goes back to a personal conversation. He came down here. I was chairman of the party down here when he ran. And he came down, and we sat over morning refreshment, and had a 45-minute conversation. And he looked me in the eye and said that he was going to be President Trump's strongest backer, and he was not going there to for any personal vendetta against the president or to be the second coming of John McCain to stop anything that the president does, just because there was personal animus between the two of them.
Yes.
And that he was going to represent Utah values in Washington and support President Trump. And the day he locked up the nomination, he put a op-ed in the New York Times calling President Trump everything but a human being.
Yeah, and I don't...
And he was, and he's been, you know... Two phony impeachment votes. Has not been, you know, his voting. His voting record is only a few votes different than Senator Lee's. If you just looked at Mitt's voting record, you would not understand why he is so despised by the Republican base here. But it's what he does the other 95% of the time in his case, where he and the votes that he separates from Mike Lee are some of the most atrocious votes in the Senate.
Yeah,
like impeaching a president who's already leaving office, almost after he left office.
So, given that, how we feel about Mitt Romney, is there backlash in replacing him? Is there a lot of people going, we've got to go, whatever we do, we've got to do the opposite of what Mitt Romney was?
Well, look, there's a battle. That Senate race is going to be very, very interesting. There's a lot. It's at least a four-person primary, I think. I don't have the exact numbers. And I know a couple of guys who went signatures were John Curtis and Brad Wilson. I know they're on the ballot. There may be another one who went signatures. And then, of course, Staggs wrapped up the endorsement of the convention.
69.7% of the vote.
Yeah. I tell you what, in his every round, it went up. And it was clear that the delegates had decided that at least one person in that primary had to be from the solid America First wing of the party. And so that was the race that took a little while to get some of that weeded out. But it went a lot faster than the governor's race, which took a lot longer to weed out those candidates because candidates were hanging in after it looked like they had no path to success to getting to 40%, where they could have dropped out and said, hey, we'll get you the next time. No need for keeping me on the ballot. And there were a couple candidates that probably would have done themselves a favor in future elections if they had done that at this convention, because the convention was going long. Should be a heck of a Senate race. This is a battle for the soul of the party. There is a candidate in this race that some people think could be the second coming of Mitt Romney, and that would be Mr. Curtis.
John Curtis, yeah.
In fact, John Curtis's name appeared on an internal Democrat National Committee email or something that was leaked. His name appeared on a list of Republicans that the Democrat National Committee believed they could work with on environmental issues.
Oh boy.
And his name appeared on that list. You can bet he's running away from that hard. However, like I say, there are a lot of people who do not believe he's the conservative that he presents himself to be.
So given the fact that Staggs won so dominantly in the electorate process and in the convention process, does that mean he pretty much the odds-on favorite to win the race in the primary?
Well, I think he's got a lot going for him. I think there can be some real momentum. The endorsement of President Trump is going to help him. But this is a primary. I do not know how much money he has. Mm-hmm. I do know that Brad Wilson has no problem raising money.
Right.
I know that John Curtis definitely has no problem raising money.
Right.
Right. I apologize if there's another candidate who went signatures that I'm not seeing in my brain because I'm not looking at a list. So I'm doing all this from memory. I have no notes in front of me for this.
Nope.
This whole thing's been from memory. So it will be interesting because money makes a difference in a primary. You know, the Republican Party has its percentage of low information voters. Not as high a percentage as the Democrats, who are vastly overpopulated in low-information voters. The Republican Party has a percentage of our voters that don't really pay attention to this stuff that close. And so they can be swayed by a great commercial campaign.
Real quick, we got two minutes left. Attorney General.
Attorney General is another race that's going to be a tight one. Millar solidly got the backing of conservatives in the American First crowd. I actually have a friend in this race. This is a hard one for me. Derek Brown is a personal friend. He was a great chairman of the party at a really difficult time, helped put the party back on its feet after Rob Anderson almost destroyed it. And so I have a personal friend in this race. I'm not objective. Derrick Brown would be a great attorney general, even though not just because he's a friend of mine. And Millar looks, he deserves a strong look. There are others in the race. I think this really comes down to Millar and probably Brown, who will.
So Congress will be in the primary, Cox and Lyman.
That's governor.
Governor, rather. Congress District 2 will be Malloy and Jenkins.
Yeah, Jenkins.
Yeah, Jensen dropped out. And then
yeah, Jenkins, yeah.
Attorney General, is it just that how many are we going to have an Attorney General?
I think there's actually three or four in that race.
Okay.
There were a few candidates who went signatures. They're going to have a loaded primary in Curtis's old district,
mm-hmm.
because there were some signature gatherers in that one as well, and so that's going to be an interesting race that we're not actually involved in down here.
Right.
But I think it's going to be an interesting primary season, and I think the Republicans did a great job of vetting candidates. There were several candidates that were weeded out of the process that should have been. And there were other candidates that, you know, made it through that did fairly well, even though they collected signatures. Others who got punished for collecting signatures. The convention did its job. We do need to get back to straight caucus convention system, holding candidates accountable because they have to explain to your neighbors why they voted the way they voted.
And we need that. And honestly, the signature gathering doesn't completely negate the whole caucus system, but it does put a dent in it.
It puts a huge dent in it because it allows people to bypass it and buy their way into office. It has definitely worked for some people. But look, the convention delegates are not the crazy radicals that the moderates painted out to be. They were elected by your neighbors.
Yeah.
You know them.
Primary is June what? Do you remember the date?
June something.
Early June, it's coming up, and we're going to see a lot of ads between now and then. Thank you, Jimmy. By the way, Exchange Club Fundraiser Dinner, May 11th. Check it out.
God bless.